Let the record show that the Hess meeting convened at about 3 minutes after 9. And those present are Representative Keller, Representative Gardner, Representative Seaton, Representative Roses, and myself, Wilson. Representative Faircloth has been excused, and I'd like to recognize that Susan Rail is with us today as our recording secretary, and Sammy Kanin is our LIO monitor, and of course my committee aide is Becky Rooney. So before we start, please turn off your cell phones, not to vibrate, but to off, because it interferes in this room with our electronics over here. So before we, we're going to do three things today. We've got scheduled two CRs and one bill for today. And first we will hear SCR 14, Para and Anesthesia Nurses Week, followed by SCR 19, Governor's Summit on Early Learning, and then we will end with House Bill 422, Children's Trust Grant for Endowment. So first of all, we're going to go into SCR 14. We're working from version C, and would the sponsor please come forward and present your bill? And we have Ginger Blaisdell, and it's Lida Green's bill, but Ginger's going to present it. So Ginger, just go ahead and tell us what this CR is all about.
All right, thank you. For the record, my name is Ginger Blaisdell. I'm staff to Senator Green. And this bill is fairly simple. It's honoring or recognizing peri-anesthesia nurses. And those are the nurses who take care of you pre-op and post-op. So they specialize in pain management and dealing with any issues dealing with anesthesia. So these are nurses we want to keep on our good side in the event we need them. The date in the resolution is in February, and obviously that date has passed. They didn't want a major announcement before they had a March conference in Fairbanks, and so she wanted to keep it secret until March. So we did send a copy of the resolution that we were working on so that they could present it at their conference, but this is just finalizing and showing them recognition for their work.
So the date in there is the way you want to keep it?
That's the way they asked for it, yes.
All right. Any questions from the committee? Representative Gardner.
I see there's no statements of support or opposition. Is there anybody who's opposed to this?
I haven't heard a peep from anyone opposed. Only I had a couple of comments from some senators saying, make sure they know I signed yes in the event I'm ever in a surgical ward. that's not the only comment I've received.
Would that be a conflict of interest?
Not under current statute.
And let the record show that Representative Sisness just joined us. Is there anyone online that would like to speak? All right, and is there anyone in the room that would like to speak? All right, hearing none, we'll close testimony. And committee, are there any other questions from the committee? And Representative Seaton.
Are you ready to move the bill?
I am.
The resolution? Madam Chair, I'll move Senate Concurrent Resolution 14, Version C from committee with individual recommendations.
And attach zero fiscal note.
And attach zero fiscal note.
Okay. Hearing no objection, so moved. Thank you very much. Okay, the next one that we're going to do is SCR 19. And that is... we have somebody in front of us already, stepping right up here. Why don't you just go right ahead, introduce yourself, and tell us about your CR.
For the record, my name is Michelle Seideman, and I serve as staff to Senator Bill Willikowski, who represents Northeast Anchorage and is participating in a Senate Judiciary meeting right now. I'm here to address Senate Concurrent Resolution 19 relating to implementation of the recommendations of the Governor's Summit on Early Learning. As many of you know, Alaska was one of 10 states awarded a grant in 2007 from the National Governors Association to hold a summit on early learning. More than 150 legislators, other policymakers, and statewide leaders participated in the summit, which took place this past December in Anchorage. One of the primary goals of summit participants was to ensure that Alaska's future economy would be supported by an educated and productive workforce. To that end, participants drafted recommendations to ensure that all children, especially those most in need, have access to quality early learning opportunities. For years, research has demonstrated that certain workforce skills, such as persistence and self-control, are taught most effectively and efficiently to children under age 6. And we all know that critical brain development occurs most rapidly in the early years from birth to age 4. In this regard, Alaska appears to be shortchanging our youngest learners, and as a result, our kids are lagging behind. Recent studies indicate that nearly half of our children enter school unprepared to be successful learners, setting them up for failure before they even begin kindergarten. They're falling behind in several areas, such as early language and literacy development, thinking and cognitive development, and the development of basic social skills. Experts attribute this in part to the lack of preschool education available in Alaska. Alaska is one of only 10 states, and I've heard Senator Betty Davis say it's now down to one of 3 states, without a state-funded, statewide early childhood system. Nationally, the trend is towards voluntary pre-K for all children. Study after study documents the benefits of quality preschool education. These include higher achievement test scores, significantly less grade repetition, major reductions in special ed placements, substantially higher rates of high school graduation, dramatic increases in college attendance, substantially fewer arrests, and much less reliance on public assistance, all of which seems almost hard to believe, but we have studies to back it up, and I'll refer you to some materials that were handed out last night. One of the most well-known studies is this Perry Preschool study that maybe others have referred you to earlier in the session that tracks those who have attended preschool. They've now tracked them past age 40, and some of the things are just amazing. The fact that a 40-year-old that attended preschool statistically has a higher rate of earning or a higher rate of employment at age 40 is, to me, startling. So according to economists, these factors that I've just named all combine to make returns from investments in preschool far greater than those from most public economic development projects. And again, in your packet, you'll see how this breaks down. The Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis reports that for every dollar spent on early ed, society reaps $16 worth of benefits in the form of reduced spending on public assistance, education, and criminal justice, and increased collection of taxes. Fortunately, public support for early learning programs is strong. Roughly 9 out of 10 Alaskans, or 87%, support state funding for early education and childcare, according to a poll conducted by the McDowell Group. SCR simply calls on Governor Palin to thoroughly consider the recommendations of the Summit on Early Education and to work closely with the legislature to implement those recommendations as appropriate. And the senator has left his Judiciary Committee meeting, and did you want to add in a few words? Okay. So we thank you for your support.
Okay. Thank you, Senator, for coming back to join us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Just for the record, Bill Wolkowski, State Senator for Northeast Anchorage. I just went up to the Dallas for
it. Okay. All right. Any questions from the committee? Representative Gardner?
Thank you. I'm struck by the Best Beginnings recommendation about Head Start. Can you speak a little bit about what the governor's proposal for Head Start funding levels were and what the legislature's currently doing for that?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, my understanding is that the governor did respond to the Best Beginnings recommendations and being contacted by several members of both the House and Senate and did increase funding for Head Start this year. I believe it was by about $700,000. My understanding is that that amount is still in both the Senate and House versions of the budget, but I can be corrected if anyone's got more up-to-date information.
And Madam Chair, thank you. I'm kind of trying to establish this for the record, too. Do we know how many kids who qualify for Head Start will still be waitlisted at the level of funding currently in the budget?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, I'm going to have to do some math quickly in my head. Last I heard, there were at least 900 children on the wait list, and my guess is, let's see, with 700,000 additional funding, I think there will still be a substantial number left on the wait list. And as you heard last week from Representative Guerra, there are many communities without Head Start programs, and there are many parents who don't realize that they're eligible for Head Start, so there are obviously many more children eligible and that would likely stand to benefit that aren't on that wait list.
And if I remember right, during those committee hearings, the department didn't even know yet where that would go, whether it would go to existing programs or whether it would even try to get some ones started that weren't in existence right now. So I think that's kind of up in the air.
Chair Wilson, my understanding is that there was a commitment on the part of the administration to use that money to extend the reach of the program to more kids, and hopefully they'll be able to do that. I think there is capacity in the Head Start programs. I requested a breakdown to see how many programs did have additional room, and it looked like there was plenty of room to absorb that money with new students.
So in the existing programs?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, thank you. Representative
to that
Roses.
Point, thank you. When we had the subcommittee hearings, and we were talking about Head Start, and there's what, four of us are on that. The number that we were given was there's 1,200 kids that are on the wait list. And when asked if money wasn't the object, how many kids would still be on the wait list, and they said considerable number, because many of the areas where the wait lists occur, the wait list isn't because they don't have a program, it's because they don't have enough space to expand the program or don't have the people to run the program. So even if you gave them the money, if you don't have the personnel to run it, you're still not going to be able to provide it. So that was a considerable concern. And the other piece that the Department of Education had concern over was that when it comes to the Head Start, the state has no oversight over what the programs offer and whether or not they are indeed meeting the criteria that are established. So there are a bunch of issues that are involved besides just the lack of funding. And so certainly if you don't have the money, the program isn't going to be developed, but if you do have the money, you also have to make sure you have the people to run it. So it's sort of a mixed bag. So, you know, which is it, the horse or the cart?
But I do know that even at the federal level, Head Start is making a lot of changes because of the early learning language development and things like that. So I know there's been a change so that kids are getting more of the language development, and I'm not sure what else, but I do know that there's been a change toward that. So,
different point.
Go ahead, Representative Rose.
Thank you. I support the resolution that. At this point, I think if we'd have the resolution sooner, if we'd have taken this up first, it would have had a little more meaning, because we already passed House Bill 306 mm-hmm. out of here, which has already establishes the development of a program. It doesn't do the implementation phase yet, but we did take the bill that Representative Guerra presented to us, and I did sign on that as a co-sponsor, to devise and put together a plan through the Department of Ed to address early education. So we're at least moving in that direction already. So I will support the resolution, but I think we're already ahead of what the resolution is asking us to do.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I'm supportive as well. And I don't think we don't want to get too far down just in the Head Start line, because we're talking about early childhood development and many recommendations. And I just wanted to make sure that as we're talking to the public through gavel to gavel here, that this isn't seen as a benefit just to individual kids. I mean, this is a benefit to us as Alaskan society when we look at the incarceration rates and the productivity of individuals as they go on through their life in Alaska. And so it's not just done as... Sometimes we look at benefits as being, oh, this is something you're giving to somebody just to help them out. And I think that what we're doing is actually looking at it, trying to make sure that we have the most effective society for Alaska with this program. So I'm supporting.
Okay, Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would very much like to also lend my support on this, and having also been one of the people at that summit, and hearing some of the good work that was being talked about, and the statistics, it's really very obvious that this is the direction that we must go, and we must go quickly. And I am also one of those who believe that one of the things that we should be doing is to try to at least fully utilize what's available in the Head Start. I was an office manager for a Head Start program back in 1970, and actually my job was to help set up a program. And it took us about 6 months to do it, but we did set up something that won national awards. So I know it can be done. I know that in my district there are people who would love to have those kinds of jobs. We need to get these things going, and I recommend we pass this quickly.
We do have a couple people online that would like to testify. Are there any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll go off net. Stephanie Ryan with Alaska AEYC.
Hi, just to clarify, my name is Tiffany Ryan with Alaska AEYC, and I am calling in support of SCR 19. You all obviously have already done quite a bit of work on some of the recommendations, for example, increasing the child care assistance rates to the 50th percent of the market rate, and increasing funding to the Head Start programs, which we very much thank you for. However, as you all know, there is more work that needs to be done. Hopefully we can work on some of these during the next legislative session. Increasing child care assistance rates possibly to the 75th percent of the market rate to be in line with the federal guidelines, increase the eligibility served through child care assistance, and continue to increase funding for Head Start so we can get that wait list down. So I just wanted to thank you for your support. It sounds like there's plenty of support in the room right now for the resolution, and hope to work with you on improving where we're at right now during the next legislative session.
Okay, thank you, Tiffany. Any questions for Tiffany? All right, next is Abby Hensley from Best Beginnings.
Hello, good morning, and thank you very much. This is Abby Hensley. I'm the executive director for Best Beginnings. I would like to thank Senator Wilikowski for bringing this resolution forward. It is important work, as has been discussed. And I just wanted to share with you all that Best Beginnings did work with the governor's office to submit a proposal to the National Governors Association, which, as you know, was funded. And we were able then to, with the help of many other partners from across the state, put on the governor's summit on early learning in December. And as a result, there are these recommendations that are before you as part of this resolution. With these 150 Alaskans, and we worked together to come up with these recommendations. I just know that there's broad-based support in our state for these kinds of efforts, and I want to thank you for your consideration. We, too, with Best Beginnings, are eager to work with the legislature and with the governor's office to see to work on these recommendations during the interim and be ready to move on some of them during the next legislative session. Tiffany Ryan, my colleague at Alaska Association for the Education of Young Children, talked about some of the work that's been done on some of the recommendations already. I wanted to point out that there are two other of the main recommendations that we've been working on, and there's plenty more work to do, so it's not a done deal for sure. But the quality rating and improvement system, the voluntary QRIS, as it's called, is one of the main recommendations as well. And that's a method to assess, improve, and communicate the level of quality in all kinds of early care and education settings. And the best beginnings through a contract with the Department of Health and Social Services, completed with the help of national consultants and some 75 Alaskans, completed a plan for a quality rating system, which the department has now. And we are eager to see a field test of the quality rating and improvement system next year, and are working closely with both the Department of Health and Social Services and the Department of Education and Early Development to see that that field test happens, so that we really will know about the quality of all kinds of, as I said, early care and education programs, and that we can improve that quality as well. Another of the recommendations was to conduct a comprehensive public engagement campaign to inform parents, extended families, community members, business, virtually everybody in Alaska, about the economic and social return on investment in the early years and what they can do to support early learning. And we have a good start on that with some of the money that has come to Best Beginnings from the state, and we're working also with the Alaska Children's Trust and others to really inform, educate the whole Alaskan society really about how important these issues are. But certainly that's the kind of campaign that is ongoing, and that we want to continue to work with you all to see that it's accomplished. I want to thank you again for the work that you have done to support young children and their families, and think that passing this resolution is another step in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Abby, and I appreciate you, Tiffany, both to give part of your Saturday away to join us here in this hearing, so we appreciate it. Is there anyone else online? Okay, then we will go to the room here, because we do have Carol Prentice with the SEED project. And Carol, why don't you come forward? Carol, have the new glasses.
Thank you very much. I had the opportunity to come before you last year, and we talked about the economic impact report that was referenced earlier today. So it's so encouraging to see the progress that's been made and to see the steps that Alaska's taking on behalf of early childhood education. So the first thing I want to say is thank you. It's very exciting for us who have worked in the field for a number of years to see the positive steps that the country's taking, and that Alaska is in line with that, which is a very positive thing. I had the opportunity to attend the Governor's Summit and actually to be on the Planning Committee, so I would really support what Abby Hensley was saying and Tiffany, and the excitement in the room and the level of knowledge, and I appreciate the legislators who participated. I just want to speak briefly to reinforce the need for the quality rating and improvement system, which really is a national model. I mean, something that states are adopting all over the country as a way of assuring quality. So it's really access and affordability and quality, and you spoke very well to that in saying part of our problem is that we don't have the personnel in our state right now to meet the needs, even if we have the funding. I work with the SEED project, which is the System for Early Education Development, based at the University of Alaska Southeast. So my particular role in this is the professional development of the personnel or the staff, the workforce, who work with young children, teachers and providers, because a lot of the people who work in that field are not certified teachers. They have some other level of credentialing, a CDA, which is recognized in the field, or an AA degree. So in particular, we're working with the professional development planning process for our state right now that's being funded by a variety of people, entities through EED and Health and Social Services. And there are 30 of us representing multiple cross sectors, tribal, child care association, all the Head Start, resource and referral network, several family and home-based child care. And we're coming together this spring to develop a comprehensive cross-sector, including infant learning and special needs children,
prototype or plan for the professional development of the field. So our goal now, between now and June 30th, is to come up with some standards and some recommendations, and then we'll look towards the next year to begin to implement some of those. I bring that up because I guess I just want you to be aware that we are in the process of really trying to raise the bar. Head Start is a national standard, and they've set a lot of high standards and mandates, and the rest of the field is sort of following and trying to catch up with that bar that they've set. So that's a lot of the work that we're doing at this point. So thank you very much for your time and your support.
Thank you, Carol. And I do want to make a comment, too, that I'm real glad to see that they're going to start that kind of the different levels in child care, because I've got some people that I know that have really gone to school, gotten the extra training and everything, and they're putting it into practice, using it, but they really don't get the credit for it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm real pleased that we're going to that point so that parents will know, this one is a level one, I don't know how it's going to work mm-hmm. out, but I'm real pleased that that's happening.
Right. I think it will be a valuable tool for parents, because as I've passed that stage now, but way back when I was at that stage, it's very daunting to look out there and try to figure out and ascertain yes. what's the best program for your child.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Thank you very much. Any comments from the committee? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify? Okay, come forward. I don't have your name, so.
No, I'm sorry.
No, okay, go ahead and have a seat. And state your name and your affiliation.
My name is Lupita Alvarez, and I am the director of the Juno Montessori program here in Juno.
All right.
And I want to thank you for your support to this resolution and the support to early childhood education. With the Montessori program, we actually, I just wanted to let you know, if you're not familiar with it, that Montessori does focuses on high education for our staff and to be able to provide the children with the best experience that we can possibly give. And we are a model that exists in the world, because Montessori is a program that is worldwide. And it's been around for over 100 years. And recently I actually found out that Head Start initiated as copying that model of Montessori and evolved over time to what it currently is, which is serving our nation very, very nicely. And with our Montessori program here in Juneau, we are so excited to be able to provide the children we have with an excellent experience in education, where they have a hands-on opportunity to learn, to develop their language, to develop all the skills that they need for further learning. And we definitely want to see that happen and be available to more and more children throughout the state and throughout the nation. And the issue of having a program that has that caliber of staff, most of my staff have either a bachelor's degree or a master's degree in Montessori education. It's costly to try to compensate people at that level, and for parents to be able to afford a program like that is very difficult. And we do our best to provide scholarships and to be able to serve the broad base of the community, but it's very difficult without support. And I think that having that child care assistance available for families, it makes it possible for those that have difficulty, coming up with tuitions where, they're almost $1,000 a month to be able to have your child in the program. And so that makes it very, very hard for us to be able to serve everyone. We want to do that, but how can we do that if we don't have some kind of funding available for a family? And so I want to let you know we are trying, but if there's no support, it's very hard. We're also trying to expand the program here in Juneau, because the need of child care in the community, it's huge, but we need a facility. We need, everything is comes down to money. We need to send more people for training, and that's also costly. And so I think that it's great to be able to have some funding available that we can make all those little steps to make it possible for the community. So I'm glad that this is occurring, and hopefully that we can find, you know, the way to make it possible that we can get the support we need to expand, find a facility, get the people trained, and offer the quality service that our children deserve.
Representative Sisnett has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And basically what you're saying is the private sector can offer good services, but if we're going to actually help children in need, and that in fact the government needs to step up. And can you tell us, because I'm sure Montessori has done studies of outcomes, and what your students have achieved as a result of the kind of early training that they've gotten. What has Montessori done?
What we've found is that children are definitely better prepared for further learning. Their reading and writing abilities are great. Their thinking, their math abilities are developed. Typically, a child that completes their kindergarten program in the Montessori program would be reading, would be doing some math, addition, subtraction, and understanding some basic, you know, concepts. We do that. All the language development is through biology, history, science, you know, the stories, the universe, anything that it's available, we bring it to the children. And we tell stories, we talk about the whales, they research about the animals in the ocean, they research about the space. So everything is brought and made available to the children. And so their work they do in writing and reading is, you know, to learn about the people, the places, and in the world. And so there's a lot of, you know, enrichment that we do at an early stage in their life. And so that obviously gives them a lot of tools for later on. There was a recent study with children in the elementary level, Montessori in traditional classrooms, and they also found that children are more socially able to collaborate, to problem solve, and more creative, more able to think in different ways to deal with situations in society. And they were more cooperative.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we know, as you identified, I think, one of the chief problems is having the training and quality of instruction and appropriate instruction. You said that you send people for training.
Yes.
Is that solely the responsibility of the person that wants a job, or are there any workforce development grants or other training grants that you're able to utilize to get somebody to
train? We've been looking around for a variety of funding sources. The Montessori community has fundraise cell pies and cell flowers and all kinds of, you know, fundraising events to be able to send people for training. We have sponsored our own teachers, so they go down for a year for training, and then they come back and work with us. And that's basically the way we've been able to build up the Montessori program in Juneau. And that's, you know, typically what communities do to promote Montessori education. There are training centers in various parts of the nation. Portland is the closest that we have. There's Colorado in the east coast. Also in California, there is another training center. And so whichever training center is available at the time we have the money to send somebody for training, that's, you know, where we send people.
Thank you. And I had the opportunity to come visit one time, a couple of years ago, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very enlightening and enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to close testimony. And now, is there a motion to move Representative Roses?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move sponsor substitute for Senate concurrent resolution number 19 with individual recommendations and a zero attached physical note.
Okay. Hearing no objections, so moved. All right. Thank you. Now you can go back to your meeting. Okay, our final bill today will be House Bill 422, the Children's Trust Grant for Endowment. And this is a HES-sponsored bill. They came to me and asked if I would introduce the bill, and I agreed to introduce the bill because I wanted to see the money awarded to the grants for child abuse and child neglect prevention. And bottom line is people don't want to give donations when the state is in control because they don't feel like the state is maybe going to use the money like they would want it to be used. And so this is just an attempt to get it out of the state's hands into a nonprofit's hands so that they can control how the money is used. So I will let my aide, Becky, go ahead and explain exactly what the bill does. And we have also Panu. You are here, and you are executive director of the
Alaska Children's Trust and the Friends of the Alaska Children's
Trust. Okay, so I'm going to let you two do your thing and tell us exactly what this is all about.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Becky Rooney, staff to Representative Wilson, and I want to thank you all for hearing this bill on this sunny Saturday morning. We'd all like to be outside. First, I'd like to give you a little history of the Alaska Children's Act. The Act was established in 1988, and it was funded in 1996 in the amount of $8 million. It is one of 52 children's trusts across the United States to prevent child abuse and neglect. It is the second largest trust in the United States, and it's currently funded just under $12 million. Established in the Office of the Governor, it receives grants and contract support from the Department of Health and Human Services. There are seven trustees appointed by the Governor that oversee the fiduciary and grant making that the trust undertakes. The Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust, which we will call FACT, organized as a nonprofit 501c3 in 1997 to increase awareness among Alaskans about the high rate of child abuse and neglect and to raise money for the Alaska Children's Fund. The current fund management has grown through investment and contribution by the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust, or FACT. No other state money is put into the fund except for the small revenue stream from the license plates and the birth and marriage certificates. Per statutes, the Treasury manages the trust through a principal account and an income account. The income may be spent, but the principal must be preserved except for the $150,000 that is used by the board each year for administrative expenses. Capital gains and losses remain with the principal, and income includes only interest and dividends. The principal of the trust is not protected from legislative appropriation if the legislature decides to so appropriate it. It's different from like the public school funds and the University of Alaska and mental health trusts that were established by Congress, and those are protected. There's a small charge annually by DOR that to manage the trust. It's a roughly $35,000. And the Alaska Children's Trust receives funds from the receipts of the license plates that I talked to you about, the kid license plates, and the heirloom marriage and birth certificates, and that's approximately $45,000 a year. The grant-making portion uses a portion of the interest from the earnings of the trust fund grants to community-based prevention programs and services. The trust provides grants limited to $50,000 per year per grant, and that is in state statute. Funding for ACT grants in fiscal year 08 was about $468,000. There's also federal grants from the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention that have supported marketing activities in this whole realm of child abuse and neglect campaign. There was an a study that was, well, actually in 2006, the ACT and FACT boards started to assess their effectiveness of the trust to accomplish the mission that they had. In 2007, the boards commissioned the giving practice to provide an independent assessment of how effective they were being. And they formed a joint restructuring committee at that time. In October of 2007, the Board of Trustees passed a motion to privatize the Alaska Children's Trust with the intent that the trust funds be transferred to a designated fund with the Alaska Community Foundation to be governed by the governor-appointed ACT board. So now here we are before you with the legislation that would repeal the Alaska Children's Trust and transfer the money to a private nonprofit organization. Now, that giving practice report identified several options, and they were to, one, eliminate trust activities and turn the funds over to the state, or to stay with the status quo as it was, as it is now, to stay with the state but negotiate statute and operational changes so that they could better perform their mission, or four, become an Alaska Community Foundation donor-advised fund, and that's one of the choices that they have made, and to utilize the 4-Acre Group as a fiscal and operational sponsor, merge with the FACT board, which is the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust, or to create a new 501c3. Now, they chose the privatization, and the reason that they did that was because they have had a history of inconsistent staffing and frequent moving of programs within the departments and staff, so there hasn't been a strong continuity there. Under the current structure, FACT is unable to raise funds and advocate for the Children's Trust. Donors do not want to make contributions to the state. And FACT is not able to guarantee that the donor intent is honored, as Rep. Wilson told you in the beginning. The FACT directors are not willing to raise money that may or may not be used as the donors intend it to be used. The current administrative structure of the trust within the state does not allow for reliable, stable budget funding for grant making. Given the trust's small operating budget and the size of the grant awards, because they're so small, many smaller communities are unlikely to apply because of the administrative burden relative to the size of the grants available. Current trust statute does not allow donations to the ACT to be used for programming. A combination of the governor appointees and self-appointed board members would ensure both adequate oversight of the public dollars and the individuals who are able to actively engage in promoting the mission of the organization. And the legal opinion from LAA, with our legal opinion, stated privatizing the fund would require a repeal of the fund and some transfer provisions for the existing principal. HB 422 would allow the legislature to use the annual estimated balance of the account maintained by the commissioner of the administration to make a named recipient grant, the Alaska Community Foundation that we talked about earlier, to be governed by the governor-appointed ACT board. Under the Alaska Community Foundation, the ACT will have greater flexibility to create a more streamlined, simplified administrative structure that would greatly enhance the trust's ability to pursue its mission efficiently and effectively. It would preserve the present revenue sources of the license plates and birth and marriage certificates for the trust. It would allow for state oversight of the funds through a governor-appointed board, and it would create a more unified voice to focus on the mission. Thank you for hearing our comments on 422, and I encourage you to pass the bill out of committee today.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I'm struck by the comment that these funds can't be used for programs. So can you give us some sort of examples of how the funds have been used?
Programming. Oh, my name is Panu Lucier, Executive Director of the Alaska Children's Trust and the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust. Programming, we are not allowed to use the funds for our own programming opportunities. In other words, we cannot run a program to prevent child abuse out of the Alaska Children's Trust. We re-grant funds from the trust to organizations, nonprofits, and entities who then can do their own programming in the form of a grant. So that's what that means. By statute, we cannot do programming.
Thank you. So, in follow-up, Madam Chair, it just means you can't do your own programs, but you give grants to other programs. Okay, makes sense.
Representative Keller.
thank you. Through the chair, just a clarification. I missed it. I wasn't listening close enough. It was a very good presentation. But you said there was like a performance audit or something? I mean, who evaluated to make that list of decisions? It's just a matter of just a question. Who was it? I missed who you said evaluated the Children's Trust.
Yeah. It was done by the giving practice out of the Philanthropy Northwest.
Follow-up,
Representative Keller.
Was that initiated by the governing board of the
Children's Trust? Yes, the Alaska Children's Trust.
Thank you. That was not.
Any other questions? Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just guess I'm trying to remember kind of some of the problems here. The funding, part of the problem with the funding does have to do with the fact that that money is not supposed to go to it is supposed to automatically go to the general fund, is it not, if it comes into the state, that it's very difficult, if not impossible. Well, I guess it's possible, but you have to structure it differently. Can you walk me through the understanding of that?
We actually have a couple people online. We have somebody from the Department of Revenue that can help us, and also Jim Baldwin is one of the attorneys for ACT. So
wonderful.
You want to just wait until they testify with that question?
Yeah, I'll save that question. Thank you.
All right. No. Representative Keller.
Another question. Do you have a full contingency on the board? I mean, everybody that, what is it, 8 slots or 7 slots? Are they all full?
7. Currently on the ACT board, we have 1 open seat.
And which seat is that?
It was formerly held by Ramey Brooks.
Was it a public?
Yes.
Who? Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Could I find out who the governor's representative or appointee? There's 1 slot on the Children's Trust, I believe, that was a governor or an appointee.
I think they're all appointed by the governor.
Right. There's 1, though, that's specified to be.
We have the Commissioner of Education. and the Commissioner of Health and Human Services, Commissioner Jackson and Commissioner Thompson, are also seated on the board.
Okay, I may have misunderstood what I read on the site, but I know that's true. You have the Commissioner of Education, the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, and several at large, and then you have 1, I think, specified as a appointee by the governor, but I may have it may not have been separated. But I guess my real question, if I could follow up one more, has the governor or is there a specific representative of the governor here to, because, if it's their position is appointed by the governor, I was just wondering why this was a committee bill, maybe you could answer this, as opposed to a committee bill as from the governor or requested by the governor. I mean, there seems like something missing here, and I'd just like to know what it is.
Go ahead.
We do have Diane Kaplan, who is one of the ACT trustees, who is available online to testify.
Okay, great.
Maybe now would be a good time to hear what she has to say. Diane Kaplan, are you online?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is Diane Kaplan. I'm a member of the Alaska Children's Trust, and I also served on the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust since its inception, and then about 5 years later was appointed by the governor to the Alaska Children's Trust and then reappointed. I appreciate the opportunity to comment. First of all, in answer to the question, the current vacancy, Ramey Brooks, is actually the governor's appointee, and he resigned from the trust several months ago. So that would be the governor's specific representative on the trust, in answer to that question. The issue of child abuse and prevention, as we all know, is very pressing in our state. Our numbers are not good compared to the rest of the U.S., and this is the only entity in Alaska that's focused specifically on prevention. It has depended on the willingness of individuals and organizations in the state to contribute their own money to add to what the endowment has held to be able to do innovative programs and approaches to getting at this very pressing issue in the state. Through nobody's fault, the structure in place is just not supporting good outcomes for the Alaska Children's Trust. The trust is a very, very small part of the Department of Revenue's funds under management. It's a very, very less, I think it's less than a third of 1%, but the department has that information. And within the Department of Health and Social Services, it's such a tiny fund that it has not risen to the level of getting the type of support that could make it successful, and it is falling in a structure that is designed for much larger grants and initiatives. As a result, very few organizations apply. The ones that do are very frustrated and have told the trust so regularly. Getting a contract, for example, through the department, such as the one for the giving practice that was described, took over a year to do. And all of these things have contributed to a situation where the trustees themselves do not feel that the trust in any way is having the impact that it could in a private setting. However, we also recognize that having a very close relationship with the state, the governor's office, the legislature, is essential to be effective because the state, all in all, is, after all, responsible for the welfare of our children. So this proposal that is put forward really is a combination taking into account the need to have a very close working relationship with the state of Alaska, but providing for a much streamlined approach to making grants and doing innovative work in this area. And the really crucial issue is that it is very difficult to get members of the public to write checks to the state of Alaska to help on the issue of child abuse prevention. As a result of that, the FACT members came to the act and said, unless we can have a different structure where we can guarantee to donors that if they want to direct their funds in a certain way, they can do so, we don't feel that it's ethical as fundraisers to be out there raising funds from the public. So that really is where we are at this point, and we are very much in appreciation to the committee for bringing up this bill because we feel it's exactly the right approach to have the right outcomes for Alaska's kids. It would make it much easier to raise funds from the public. We could have individuals across the state who have interest in a particular geographic area who want to put their funds to work right away to do so. Right now, if you make a donation to the Alaska Children's Trust, by statute, it can only go directly into the endowment, which means at most only the earnings and dividends from those funds could be put to work right away. So in other words, to get the full value of your donation, you might have to wait 20 or 25 years to see those dollars go out the door. And that's just a situation that makes it very, very difficult to get donors to see the impact of the donations that they give. In some years, because the stock market is down or because of the instruments in which the fund is invested, there are no funds available to give out. So in terms of providers who are trying to do meaningful programs over time, and this is not an issue you solve in 1 year, they cannot count on stable funding from the Alaska Children's Trust. There's no percent of market value. There's no ability to use the value of the endowment in making decisions on grant awards. We are limited only to the specific interest dividends in any individual year, which makes it so from 1 year to the next, there can be a greatly different amount of money available to grant, and we only have a couple of months after even knowing what that number is to be awarding grants. So it just, for all intents and purposes, has not been a success in terms of achieving the mission that the state set out for it. And we have come to the conclusion unanimously on both the FACT and ACT board, and we work with this issue every day, that this would be a much more nimble, effective approach to helping address the issue of child abuse and neglect. Thank you very much.
Diane, Representative Wilson. I have a question. Because the state initially put in the $6 million, and that has grown to $12 million, are you planning to try to keep that as an endowment itself and perhaps, I don't know how you'll set it up, but maybe use the percent of market value or something, any donations that would come in the future, you would be able to use them at the time, depending on what the donor, what their wishes were?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. So, for example, the University of Alaska has an endowment fund, but they also do a lot of programs that donors support. So if I'm a donor and I make a donation to the University of Alaska Foundation, I can direct it either to the endowment, which means it'll be there for in perpetuity and only amounts that are within the spending policy of the University of Alaska endowment, which I believe is 4.5%, could be used. Or I could designate it directly to a program or scholarship that I want to support this year. And that's my choice as a donor, and that's what makes for an effective program supported by private donations, is the ability for the donor to direct exactly where their donations go. It's just like the state share campaign or any of the other campaigns. I, as a donor, get to say I'm interested in this issue and I want to support a long-term endowment, or I would like to support this program in Bethel this year, or I would like to support AWAKE and their new program this year. So that would be my choice as a donor.
Okay.
And it would be up to the trust to carry out that intent.
All right. Thank you very much. And Representative Sisna has a question.
Yes. And, Diane, I would like to get a better picture, because I think I haven't seen the Children's Trust really in the way that I'm now beginning to realize I should see it. Tell me if, in fact, what the Children's Trust is trying to be or wants to be or is a philanthropic, essentially like a philanthropic organization, and eventually maybe even get to the size of say the Rasmussen Foundation or something like that, and that in fact the not doing programmatic, at least maybe that was the early thing, so please just catch me up on where you are on this, in those big broad umbrella kinds of organizations, they really are making sure that the activity happens by more local more nimble organizations than they might be, and that they direct their funding with really clear ideas in mind and really good structure and really strong sort of principles built into the analysis of how the money's being spent. Is that sort of it? Or am I off?
I think you've really hit the nail on the head. What the state really needs is a group that is focused solely on this issue, that is aware of best practices across the United States on how to get at this issue, on how to have meaningful results in terms of reducing the instance and the instances of child abuse and neglect, and then of directing its funds in the most effective manner. Right now, the trust is largely a passive organization that waits once a year to see what comes in the door. We want to move the trust to being the thought leader and the advocacy leader on this issue across the state so that we can have real approaches that have been proven effective, and then bring in all the other parties in the state, both private, the state agencies, and so on. And, for example, go to the Mental Health Trust and say, we have evidence that 23% of all the cases of child abuse involve beneficiary is the Mental Health Trust. How can we work with the Mental Health Trust to come up with some innovative strategies to provide the education, training, knowledge to young beneficiaries so that they can be part of the solution on child abuse and neglect and not part of the problem? Those are the types of activities that the trust would like to be involved in, or working with the state of Alaska and the department and saying, we've done a lot of research and we would like to propose that the state try these pilot projects, which have been working in other states, to work with middle school students, for example, to work with high school students at an earlier stage on what the proper way to hold and handle a baby is. We don't require that at all of our kids. They can graduate from high school, they have requirements in other areas, but they can go right into parenthood and have no idea whatsoever how to treat a very young infant. And that's where a lot of our problems happen in the state. We don't have efforts across the state aimed at those. So it really is putting the trust in a situation of being a leader and an innovator rather than a passive responder.
Thank you.
Representative Roses has a question.
Thank you, Diane. Not so much a question as a comment, because I hope I didn't hear you say what I thought I heard you say, but I'm very supportive of this bill and the fact that it's going to privatize it and give you a lot more flexibility, give you the ability to raise funds and expand the program beyond what the capabilities are now. But I would disagree that the department doesn't understand what the best practices are, or the department doesn't have the ability to recognize what needs to be done. I think we've tied their hands in some way, the same as yours have been. So I hope that I didn't hear you say that the department wasn't capable of doing the work.
Through the chair, Representative, I was not saying that at all, and I hope I didn't sound like that. One of our most important members of the trust is the commissioner, who doesn't send a designee to our meetings. She attends our meetings herself, and she has, as a very important part of what she does, her work with the Children's Trust. It's just that this is such a small entity within a very huge department with many different priorities that is very difficult to be able to deploy these very small amounts of funding into something that's more than an add-on to what already is doing. And as I mentioned, the trust, including the two commissioners, are unanimous in feeling that the trust would be much more of a value to the state operating in a more nimble fashion instead of under the rules and regs and processes that a department as huge as the Department of Health and Social Services is required to follow.
Follow-up,
Representative Rose.
Thank you, Diane. I just wanted to clarify that for the record. We've talked before, and I knew you didn't intend it that way, but I wanted to make sure that people didn't misunderstand what your statement was. So thanks.
Appreciate that.
Okay, thank you very much, Diane. And Sammy, you're just going to have to tell us what your last name is, because I can't pronounce it the way it looks here. So just go ahead and tell us you're from FACT, and tell us your name and your affiliation.
Good morning. My name is Sammy Pokrisky, and I'm here on behalf of the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust. And on behalf of the Friends, I want to express my support for House Bill 422. I've been on the Board of Directors of the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust for 2 years. The Friends is a nonprofit organization whose primary purpose is to raise funds for the Alaska Children's Trust to support programs and activities that prevent child abuse and neglect. Many of us on the Friends Board have extensive experience in nonprofit fundraising, and we follow the guidelines from the National Association of Fundraising Professionals. This association operates under a code of ethics that advises fundraisers to honor donor intent when requesting charitable contributions. And as has been said a few times prior to me, under the current structure, the Friends is really unable to accomplish this primary purpose. Donors do not want to make a contribution to the state. The Friends are not able to guarantee that donor intent is honored, and therefore the Friends directors are not able to raise money that may or may not be used as donors intend. And so we have a situation right now where we have people who are extremely dedicated to
to preventing child abuse and neglect. And we have a structure that doesn't allow them to use their very best skills in fundraising to accomplish that. So the Friends agree that the privatization effort is the best way to move forward, and therefore we're in full support of this legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sammy. I don't see any questions, so is there anyone else online that would like to make comments on this bill? Okay, hearing none, we'll go to the – I would like the commissioner to come up. I think it's
– Could I have one more question? Ask one more question.
Yes, just – okay. Yes, Representative Keller.
Thank you. I was wondering, if the bill goes through, who will – can you describe who will actually be, like, setting the mission? I mean, it's a really worthy mission, and I'm really supportive. You know, I mean, it's really great. But, I mean, what I'm thinking about is who, right now it's established by that group of appointees. Will that remain the same?
Yes. Okay. Our intent is to remain to keep the structure of the board, and the majority of the board members would be – trustees would be appointed by the governor. So the state would still have oversight in that respect. That the majority of board members or trustees would be appointed by the governor,
and they'd be the
commissioners.
A follow-up.
Follow-up representative.
They would be the same, described the same way.
Yes.
You know, the commissioner of health and social services, the commissioner of education, and four at large. And I think there's one. Okay. Thank you.
If I may, Becky Rooney, through the chair, also Representative Keller, there, the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, or vice versa, I never get the words right, but anyway, they are going to be writing up in a way that the grant will be handled, and then that will probably be reviewed yearly through an audit. So there is an opportunity for both the specific structure of how the grants are being handled plus the board.
One more question. It's more just I can't find it. where is the, and I found the description of who the board members are online, but is that statutorily defined, or is it, do you know, or is that defined by who, by what? I mean, where does it come from now?
Here, madam, that the. It is defined in the state statutes about the 7-member governor-appointed board.
Okay. I just didn't find
it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And I would like I would like Commissioner Jackson to come forward.
And Jerry Burnett, too.
And the Commissioner, the reason I'm having you come forward because I would we haven't heard any negative comments at all upon this, but I do want it on record. Where is the department as far as this is going?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Carlene Jackson, Commissioner for Health and Social Services, and I appreciate the opportunity to tell you that I am completely in support, as is the rest of the department, of this proposal, as is the governor. I did have a conversation with the governor about the fact that the act and the fact have been discussing for a couple years the possibility of privatizing. And to get to Representative Keller's question, we did consider the possibility of a governor's bill, but in a shortened session, knowing the number of bills that were going to be out there, it seemed more prudent to have this be a bill that would come a different way, particularly because it demonstrates the strong support from the act and the fact to move us in this direction, and that it's not a governor pushed kind of thing, if you would, but it's definitely a governor supported proposal. I think one of the biggest keys to why this would be successful in this way is we have volunteer board members, and the governor appointed member of the board has not yet been appointed because the executive director of boards and commissions is trying to point openings on 250 some different boards, councils, and commissions, and just hasn't gotten to this one yet. So it's really important that we honor the volunteer hours that our volunteers give us and simplify as much as possible the work that they try to do so they can accomplish the mission of the Alaska Children's Trust. Others have spoken to that very eloquently. but it's important that we engage all Alaskans in child abuse prevention, not just the Office of Children's Services, and this trust is one really good way that we can get there. The only other thing I would show you, and I can't see this from here, but I was sitting there kind of mapping out what goes on right now for our volunteers. We have volunteers with the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust trying to raise money. They then interact with the volunteers for the Alaska Children's Trust. And that board has to interact with education, health and social services, and revenue in order to be able to do the work of the trust. What we're trying to do is help the Alaska Children's Trust simply be able to work on their mission and have the funding component not require that they work with three different departments within the state of Alaska. So with that, the details about how the Children's Trust functions, the financial details, we have Jerry Burnett here who's able to speak eloquently to how it has been and how it could be and answer those other questions.
Representative Roses has a question.
Thank you. Actually, if Jerry could come forward, I'd appreciate it because it may be a question he may need to answer. In summary, I hope what I heard you say is you're trying to remove the anchors from behind the ship as it moves forward.
Through the chair, Representative Roses, that would be an appropriate analogy.
Okay, thank you. I do have a question on the bill on page 3, line starting at line 18. And this is why I had Jerry come forward, because this may be something he needs to answer. But it says the grantee shall annually report the conditions and investment performance of the grant funds to the Commission of Revenue and the Board. And if the grantee materially breaches a condition of the grant agreement set out in this section, the balance of the grant reverts to the state. Page 3, line 18. I'm looking at version E. I hope we're on the same version.
Okay.
Here, my question would be, is the commissioner as well as the Department of Revenue comfortable with that statement? And the second part to that would be, will there be some mechanism in place for corrective action prior to the reversal? And I wouldn't want there to be the first time there's a breach of the conditions that we automatically revert back to where we have. I would think that we want to put some type of mechanism in place to allow them corrective action before we take it over again.
Representative Roses, through the chair. This is a new type of requirement that I have not discussed with the commissioner specifically, but the Department of Revenue is supportive of this bill and we have no issues with it. I don't know how we would do corrective, and I would think what we'd be doing is comparing to like the Callan database, how they're doing in performance compared to what we would expect to be done. So I don't see any problems with doing this, but I mean, we haven't discussed how it would be done.
Follow up?
Yes, and we do have Jean Michelle, who is the drafter of the bill, online, and she might be able to answer some of that, too. But go ahead and ask your next question.
That would be fine, and if she needs to jump in, I would very much appreciate it. You understand my concern. I realize this is new out of the chute, and we don't have any past practices to rely on here in terms of what's there. But is the Department of Revenue planning on assisting them in the nature of how those investments would be established?
For the record, this is Jerry Burnett, Department of Revenue. I don't think I introduced myself last time, but at this point, we have no plans for that.
Thank you, and if I may follow up, that becomes, therefore, my concern. We're going to measure them against the other systems that we have in place in the state, in particular, the Permanent Fund Dividend Board, the ARM Board, and so on. And so we're going to measure their success for their investments against what we do, but yet we're not involved in helping them develop the strategy for those investments. So that's why I have the concern that if there was what we would consider a material breach of the investment agreement, we then have the state the ability to go in and take those funds back again. What I want to make sure is in place is there's some kind of dialogue between the entities before that takes place. I know you guys are supportive, but this bill is written for in perpetuity. We don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now or 12 years from now. So I think there should be a mechanism in place by which there is at least some way in which some type of corrective action can be taken prior to the reversal of those funds, and that's my only concern. I don't have a problem with either of you because I know I've worked with both of you, but I don't know who's going to be doing that decision-making 10 or 12 years from now.
Okay, if I could, Representative Roses, there will be a grant agreement with the Department of Community Economic Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, or whatever they call now, and that agreement is where that mechanism would be set out, I would expect, and that would be a contract between the state and this person.
Okay, may I follow up? And I think that's all I need. As long as those things are going to be clearly written and that they adhere to what the intent is that I've outlined here, I'm perfectly comfortable with that. But I think somewhere it needs to be in writing as to what the mechanism would be for corrective action prior to reversal. So if that's written into the guidelines when the grant is set up and when the transfer occurs, then I'm extremely supportive of this. That's my only concern.
Jean, Michelle, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Could you answer any of those questions? Have you been following along?
Yes, I have, Representative Wilson. I agree with the Department of Revenue that there's a lot of latitude in the drafting of this bill for setting terms within the grant agreement. There is a question, however, that was raised earlier about where the board is established, and in fact this bill repeals that board, and I just wanted the committee members to understand that the grant agreement will require a designated grantee to consult with an advisory group set up within the Office of the Governor, but the board as it currently exists would be repealed.
Okay. Representative Keller has a question.
If I may, I'd like to make a comment and give both Jean Michelle and the representative of the departments to respond if they would. But what's been described as an anchor is statute in this case. And I've often said that I wish I could make a law that for every word that we wrote, we'd have to subtract two. And I want to commend Jean. You did that. But I would like to put on the record what's been deleted. What's been deleted is the establishment of the trust, the powers and duties of the Commissioner of Revenue, the administration of the trust. These are the titles of the sections. The trust board, how it's when it's established, the powers and duties of the board, the fund utilization, the grants, the criteria for the grants, and the eligibility for the grants, and then there's a definition section. So I'm all for what this bill is doing. We don't want something all bound up in statute that we can't, in fact, in the end, stop and prevent do things to prevent child abuse, but I do also really appreciate the fact that the legislature has a responsibility for providing the policy, and I would like to see us at least engaged at the level of describing the mission, you know, of how this money is going to be spent somehow. And that's just a very general statement, and that's why I wanted to do it while Jean was online to see how she would respond to that. So thank you.
May I follow up on that?
Follow up, Representative Roses.
Thank you, Gene. One of the, on page 3, starting at line 14, going through the end of line 17, even though it does away with the current board, doesn't it outline what the provisions will be for a new board that will be created at the same time that eliminates the current one?
Through the chair, Representative Roses, what page 3, lines 14 through 17 does is require the consultation with a group like that. We don't have anything left in statute that requires the governor to maintain an advisory group or board. I suspect, given the comments from the commissioner, that that won't be a problem, but one way of dealing with that is to maintain the board in substantive law in what is now AS 3714225, but to reconfigure that so that it's an advisory group to a named recipient grantee. That was certainly one possibility that I suggested early on. But there's, unless there's some concern that the governor wouldn't maintain an advisory group, maybe that's not necessary. I don't know. But one other legal issue when that's raised by this bill is, as Representative Keller mentioned, there is no guarantee that other than the material breach language that the trust would be maintained as originally constructed. There are donations and fees that went into that trust over the past 20 years. They're being under this bill, that money would be held as an endowment. But there's some concern, however limited, and I think Jim Baldwin could speak to this, that the license fees and marriage certificate fees, as well as any private donations that came in originally, they're being transferred to a private entity essentially for the same purpose that they were originally collected for, but I'm not aware of any other example in state law where we've done that, so I'm just alerting the committee that there's some potential that those fees would be lost from the certificates and the license plates, and maybe some argument from past donors that they're unhappy with the transfer. I'm not suggesting that that would succeed, but there is a potential for challenge there. There is one example of license plate fees that the legislature passed just this past session, where public fees are being collected for the benefit of a private organization. But it is fairly unique in the state, and I just wanted you all to know that this is a new sort of new territory, and the grant agreement would be crucial in maintaining the original purpose of that money.
Representative Roses has another question.
Thank you, Jean. I appreciate that. The bill that you're referring to was mine. And
right. The
supporter troop license plate, we worked extensively on that to make sure that it fit the parameters, and that was the biggest concern that we had, is that money being paid to the state was going to a private organization. But I think we covered it fairly well, and all of the legal advice that we got on it seemed to think that it would work. And so when I was approached by individuals on this particular bill early on, I recommended that they take a look at how we structured that one so that it would follow the same framework, because we felt it was fairly well tested. So that I appreciate, but help me through something here, because I guess I'm reading this bill wrong. If you start on page 3, line 5, it says, before a grant to the named recipient is awarded, and then it goes on, and then it says the customary provisions must include the following. And included in that, before the transfer would be made to this other entity, it includes that the grant shall consult with an advisory group established in the office of the governor. It doesn't say when it was established. It could be the existing board, or it could be a new board. And then it goes on to explain who that would be, being the Commissioner of Health and Social Service, Commissioner of Education and Early Development, 7 public representatives, at least 3 of which are appointed by the governor. So I'm looking at the word established and looking at that as a criteria that must occur before the money would be transferred. Does that not then satisfy the fact that we would have a board in place and there would be no lack of transition?
Through the chair, Representative Roses, what this advisory group, what paragraph 4 is referring to is a grant agreement provision. It doesn't effectively establish the advisory group. It refers to an advisory group that we hope the governor will maintain and establish. The makeup of that group is different from the current trust board.
Yes.
And we could fairly easily set up this advisory group in the governor's office in substantive law if we're concerned that that may not actually occur. But all this paragraph does is require, it places a condition on the grantee, not on the governor.
Thank you.
Representative Roses.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gene, given the conversation we've had and you know what the intent is that we would like to have established in this, and there's two for me. There's the one to make sure that it's clearly understood that we would like to have a board, even if it's not the same board, if it's a new board that's spelled out in the makeup here, we're okay with that, at least I am. And then the other piece that I had was that making sure that it's clearly understood the intent is that as the guidelines are established, that there's some mechanism for corrective action to be taken before the funds would be reverted back to the state. Given that information, if those were made as conceptual amendments, would you be able to draft that in a form before it went to the Finance mm-hmm. Committee that would accomplish those objectives?
Through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. And Representative Gardner has a question.
I think actually my question may be the same, but I just want to word it differently and make sure we're on the same page. If the grantee materially breaches a condition of the grant agreement and the breach has to do with a failure to consult with an advisory group, possibly because the group hasn't been appointed and doesn't exist, there would be then a mechanism by which they would the balance of the grant would not revert to the state. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I would certainly, if I were advising the Department of Commerce, I would probably tell them that, yeah, that doesn't constitute a material breach because the condition could not be satisfied. And typically when you refer to a material breach, that's a significant lack of compliance in the original purpose of the grant, and I don't think a court would be very sympathetic if the state actually thwarted compliance.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I think we'll get the CCED. I'm not sure if that's right.
Yeah.
up and ask them a little bit about this, but Representative Keller has a question.
Yeah, this is on point, I believe, before we get them up here. I wanted to ask Gene, while the Commissioner of Health and Social Services is here and the Department of Revenue, if we couldn't put a section in the, you know, where it's talking about the agreement with DCED, to put the mission statement that the Alaska Children's Trust, basically what they have on the site, and keep it there, I'm sure we can do that. I mean, we can set that mission as part of the criteria or guideline for that agreement. And I want to read it just, it says to improve the status of children in Alaska by generating funds and committing resources to eliminate child abuse and neglect. And the reason I'd like to do that is because it's very easy, I think, for a group like this to become an advocacy group, which sometimes has a lot more to do with lobbying the legislature, you know, for ongoing funds than actually working on the problem. And I don't mean to be cynical like that, but it would give me some comfort if we could establish that mission as part of what DCED agreement is, so that we know, you know, so we can keep that from the legislative end.
Okay, and Representative Sisna.
Sort of to that point, as I understand, in a lot of these different organizations that have mission statements, it can tie your hands. There is a need to stay somewhat flexible, and if in fact And somebody else can sort of check me on this one, but I really think putting that specific language in place. I've been in how many different organizations, listen to the state Department of Health and Social Services reword its mission statement. It is something that you work on and you keep trying to improve because you find out things as we go along and do testing and see the outcomes of things and realize, we've got to tweak this a bit and head a different direction. So I, as much as I think it's true, you want to kind of keep it focused on a general idea, I think a specific statement wouldn't be good.
Follow up, Representative Kelly.
Yeah, and just to clarify, I really wasn't asking for that decision on the amendment now. But I wanted Gene to respond if that was okay. Within legal parameters to be able to offer that maybe a little later.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, and I'll let you know what my intentions are. I would like to get Sally Sadler up here from CCED, and then I would like Penn U to be able to come back up. And she's been listening. I've been watching her. She's been writing. So after Sally comes up, and kind of clarify some of the things we've been talking about, then I'd like to have Penn U come back up.
Great. Well, thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Sally Sadler, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I realize we have a tricky persona, but our mission does remain the same. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the bill. When I walked in this morning, I was thinking if what we're looking at with this particular grant is a straight pass-through grant, a one-time appropriation of the $12 million of the fund with perhaps an annual appropriation for the sales that come from the license plates, that it would be a very straightforward section of the law for us to implement. As I listen to the discussion, and if there are some requirements that we need to be monitoring, perhaps providing oversight, support, and assistance, to some of the, I think it's six articles that need to be in place as part of that grant agreement, I'm thinking at that point we probably would need to have a grants administrator. What we have right now in the department are eight grants administrators who work with over 1,700 grants that total in excess of $200 million. So the amount of work that would be involved in us to provide that oversight and guidance would in fact probably require a body to be able to do that work if it's something beyond strict pass-through of those funds. So and I hope that addressed. I had to step out, so I'm sorry. I hope that addressed.
Okay, and I'm just thinking, okay, so right now you have six or five?
We have eight grant administrators.
Okay, eight grant administrators, and how many grants?
1,700 grants in excess of $200 million that we work with. A lot of those are legislatively designated grants, so it's strictly a matter of executing a grant agreement, making those funds available to the grantee, and then minimal monitoring in the sense of what we would do is look at making sure proper cost accounting documents are in place to justify the expenses before we would reimburse the grant.
Okay. And then you're saying that if this one more was added, you would have to have another person.
Madam Chair, what I'm saying is if it's strictly a pass-through grant, I think we would be able to go ahead and take this on. My concern would be that it does talk about before a grant to a named recipient is awarded, there are certain conditions that need to be in place. If we need to work with, if it comes to us in that agreement, everything is in place, it wouldn't be a problem. If there's a responsibility of the department to help execute some of the requirements or sidebars that, for monitoring the grant, then we probably would have difficulty accomplishing that within existing resources.
Okay, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Well, I'm a little bit confused because my understanding of this bill was that the intent is to move all that money, all the responsibility for managing it to the Alaska Community Foundation, and they would deal with the individual grantees and they would handle all the paperwork and simply make an annual report back to the Commissioner of Revenue and the board that's described in lines 14 through 17. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, I don't see where DCCED would need to be monitoring individual grantees and grants.
And through the chair, Representative Gardner, that's exactly the clarification that we're here to seek today before we look at what the fiscal effect would be on the department.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rosas had a question.
Thank you. I follow up on the same thing, because I think the bill is very clear that it is a pass-through grant, and all it says is that you're not going to pass that money through until these conditions are met. So I don't see it as you having to continually monitor it. It's up to them to make sure that when they come to you for the transfer that all of these conditions are in place. And as much as they want to do this, I can't imagine that they would not have all of these in place before they got there. So I don't see the continual monitoring part, but I certainly am very appreciative of the fact that you've brought that concern forward for clarification of the intent. So this legislator's intent is that you not have to continue to monitor it, that they bring it to you as a final package.
And I see heads wagging up and down here.
Through the chair, Representative Roses, that's exactly the clarification we seek, and what we'll do is end up with a zero fiscal note that will be forthcoming with the bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, Panyu, would you like to come forward? You've heard all kinds of concerns, and I saw you writing furiously back there, so go ahead and make your comments now.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity. Again, I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Children's Trust and Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust. I just wanted a few moments to say something that I feel is very important to me. I am new to the position as Executive Director, having just been hired in December. One of the things that really attracted me to this job is I have been a court-appointed special advocate for the past years, 8 years. I am myself Alaska Native. My prior position was at the Alaska Humanities Forum, where I founded and directed the Roseman Rural Exchange in a mission which helps to bridge understanding between urban and rural Alaskans. I had the opportunity to work with many villages, receive resolutions. I have a good connection with rural Alaska. And what I see needs to be in place is that the state currently provides services to children who are already in state custody. The March report from the Office of Children's Services says that there were over 2,000 children in state custody. 61% of those, and I know you're familiar with the statistics, are Alaska Native or American Indian children. That hits me close to my heart because I am Alaska Native. I want to be able to make a difference in the area of prevention to keep these kids from getting out of the system. We need to do that. And the Alaska Children's Trust is the entity to do that. But our hands are tied the way that the current system is set up. Rural communities don't apply for our grants because it's not a very efficient and effective system. It's very difficult. They often don't have the resources to apply for grants. Our grants are small. They're capped at $50,000. I want rural communities to have those funds to be able to prevent children from getting in the state system. Of course, I advocate for all children, but because there is such a high number of Alaska Native children, I want to be able to, through the Alaska Children's Trust and the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust, to make a difference. And in the long run, prevention pays. There's been studies that said that parents who have access to prevention programs and services in their own communities, the impact can be seen in healthier children, and long term, and this reduces the burdens on the state on services such as education, law enforcement, corrections, and mental health. So that's just what I wanted to say today, that through privatization, the Alaska Children's Trust and the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust will have a better avenue for making an impact and reducing the number of children in state custody by allocating funds to do prevention programs and activities.
I have a question. Can you give us some examples of that maybe someone would apply for under $50,000, and some examples of something that they could be doing that would make a difference?
Madam Chair, yes. Currently, we have six grantees who are focusing on the Strengthening Families Initiative. It's a national initiative that works at the very basic of helping to build strengthening families involved in early child care. Those are some of the ways that we have. I was hoping one of our grantees from the Juno Family Birth Center would be here today to testify on what they're doing in terms of helping new parents, in terms of parenting classes. It was mentioned, I think Diane Kaplan mentioned, that We don't have a system for providing children or high school students with parenting classes. So some of our grantees are focusing on new parents. There's a Cuddle Cure program in Fairbanks that helps parents deal with fussy babies before, so they understand why their baby's fussy and how to deal with that, so they don't end up abusing their children and getting into the state system. So that's another program. Our social marketing campaign through the Resource for Parents and Families also has the Alaska Parent Line, which parents can call 24 hours a day if they need help with parenting questions or resources. So some of our social marketing funds from our federal grant go towards monitoring and actually implementing and running the Alaska Parent Line. So those are some examples of what grantees are doing with the prevention funds. It's all based on preventing and helping parents and preventing children from getting in the system.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Representative Keller has a question.
I just want to say thank you for your passion and your drive and your insights and to assure you that scrutiny of what we're doing here, we're on your side on this.
Thank you.
And it's it just so many times we find there's unintended consequences if we don't really look carefully at what we're doing. We want your hands to be untied, too, so you can get the job done, because it is a very important one. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And I'm pleased to hear you speak, too, because it makes me feel good to know that if we've got someone at the helm that really has that passion, that it always makes a difference for everybody that's involved. So I appreciate that. Representative Roses.
Thank you. And I wanted to echo some of the same sentiments. You represent your group very well. And if the other folks that are working with you and those that are going to be part of the board have the same compassion and same dedication you have, we look forward to seeing some really good stuff be accomplished. But I also wanted to make one closing comment on this, and that if Representative Keller intends to move forward with this kind of statement that he was talking about before, I would look forward to working with him on that, because as we heard the testimony for the previous bill that we had, the lady from Montessori talked about how she had been trying to coordinate with the Alaska Children's Trust as part of some of the education and early development. I don't want us to set up a statement that would prevent that from happening, or that they have to jump through multiple hoops in order to be able to justify that that is an acceptable grant awardee that they would be able to provide. So we want to do it right. We want to give you the protection. We want to give you the latitude and the flexibility. But we also want to make sure that the provisions and the protections are in place. So as Representative Keller said, don't mistake any of those comments for being against it, but just trying to help you get where you need to be with the protections necessary to get there.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm going to take a brief at ease. Are you okay? Now we will have committee discussion, and is there anyone else here that wanted to testify? Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony, and then let's have some discussion as a committee. Representative Keller, you had some concerns.
Not a concern. I would just like to offer a conceptual amendment. In the, I will look at the bill. It's in the, I think, the uncodified section, section 7, subparagraph B, where you've got the items 1 through 6 there, that where it talks about what the agreement is to include. I don't know whether, this is why it's conceptual. I don't know whether the drafter would choose to put it in subparagraph B or as a separate subparagraph, but just state in there that the purposes of this fund would be to improve the status of children in Alaska by generating funds and and committing resources to eliminate child abuse and neglect, period.
Okay, I object for discussion, because I believe I heard them say that we didn't want to pull things too tight. We wanted them to be a little bit loose so that that they had the flexibility that they need. I don't, because I really truly don't think that their purpose will change, but their techniques and things like that as they go along might. So comments?
Thank you. A mission statement is very broad. You know, it's really broad, but it does really help keep the 60,000-foot level in perspective so that, so say you're a gubernatorial appointee to this, to be on this board. You know, I just recently was appointed to several. Well, that's the first place I went because I wanted to know, I really wanted to get the picture of what it was, that what the purpose of this is supposed to be. And that's lacking at this point. What we're doing is we're asking DCED to make an agreement. You know, and I think we heard Jean say, and I don't mean to put words in her mouth, but I think she says, it's not really a concern because of the history of some of the donations and that, but there's still mission drift is a problem. And, you know, if maybe what I'm suggesting as a mission statement is appropriate, but that would surprise me because it's one that's provided by the Children's Trust.
I don't feel like we should make their mission statement, but we can add some intent to it or something like that. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 3, line 12, which is item number 3 of the section that we're talking about, says the endowment trust shall be administered for the benefit of community-based programs and projects in the state that aid in the prevention of child abuse and neglect. I believe the language is already there, and so I would support the chair's statement that, you know, they might have a mission statement that's independent, but I think we've already got language here that protects and ensures that the funds we're transferring will be used for the projects we're mm-hmm. wanting.
If I may respond to that.
No, wait, Representative Sisna.
Madam Chair, I was merely going to put a friendly amendment to the amendment, just changing to protect children's health as a kind of a general statement, because it may be over time that in fact there is a move away from a negative statement to kind of maybe some other kinds of things. But I also see some strength in Representative Gardner's statements.
Okay, and Representative Roses.
Thank you. I would agree that the item that Representative Gardner referred to takes care of that, but my concern about putting a mission statement in the bill is that my hope is that this fund grows exponentially. And I do not want to prevent them, because of the way we word something in a bill, to then be able to do more outreach for children in other areas. And so even though their mission statement is what it is today, I'm hoping their mission statement will expand in the future as the money expands. And so I, for that reason, I wouldn't want to limit their mission statement by putting it in the bill.
Okay, Representative Keller.
I would respond that from my perspective, you're all arguing very strongly to keep the legislative role of policymaking out of this. And I disagree. You know, we have a great system. The access that we all, our constituents, have to us is the next best thing to the school board, because the school board only has, you know, just a limited number of people that can, and people can come to us and we can have effectiveness policy. The Children's Trust was established for a specific purpose, and that purpose is to stop child abuse. And we've been told today that the problem is that we have tried too carefully to say, you know, this is how you do it. This, and their hands are tied and they can't move. And I think what you're saying is that, and I think you've illustrated my point, I think if we take the mission statement out of this, I think there is a real possibility that it will drift to other concerns of children's health, you know. And that's, I see that as inconsistent with the purpose of the trust, and I think a mission statement keeps it on course, and a statute is not concrete. I mean, another legislature, another time, if this thing gets up to $3 billion or whatever through donations and they can expand, then it seems to me like that the legislature ought to be involved in how that money is appropriated if it's different than the intent of what the Children's Trust money was intended to be. So So I still would argue strongly that we need, maybe the wording of my mission statement isn't appropriate, but it sure seems like it is very consistent because it's what I didn't provide it. It's right out, it's their work. It's the Children's Trust work. So still would advocate for it. Okay.
And I guess I think of, I'm thinking of the Mental Health Trust right now a little bit, that when they first got going, they were zeroed in on certain things, but now, because of knowledge they've gained, they're clear over here thinking of ways to give them good housing at the same time that they're doing some other things, which might not have fit in with what they originally started with, but it's still doing, it's still accomplishing a lot of that. So I am concerned, but we do have an amendment to the amendment on the floor. So what I want to say, you made a friendly amendment to the amendment, and your amendment was children's health. And I was thinking of children's health and well-being.
Object. Yeah.
It was. It would be the same wording, but to protect children's health.
Okay.
Which is right. Far more general.
And there is an objection. Representative Gardner?
Thank you. I understand the maker of the amendment has a tremendous passion for children's health, but I think right there adding that just broadens the whole thing, and I could see all of the money being used on children's health and not prevention and prevention of abuse.
Representative, yeah, the statement here on line 12, page 3, says shall be administered for the benefit of community-based programs and projects in the state that aid in the prevention of child abuse and neglect. It's actually a very similar statement. It's just one's positive, one's negative. This is focused on children. It's a children's trust. And prevention is protection is prevention. It's just a different way of saying it.
Madam Chair?
Representative Gardner.
I'm sorry, I guess I don't understand what your amendment is. Could you read it how it would be?
It would, and if you don't mind my leaning over
no,
here.
No, go ahead.
Piece of paper.
Where would it fit in?
It follows right along the language that Representative Keller put in. He said, his statement was improve the status of children in Alaska by generating funds and committing resources to eliminate child abuse and neglect. And that's what his statement would say. My friendly amendment merely changed those last six words to three words that say, or four words that say to protect children's health. That's all it does. It
makes it more general. Thank you. And I'm sorry, just for my understanding, would you read it as it would be if your amendment were in it?
Thank you. Improve the stat, Madam Chair, follow up. Improve the status of children in Alaska by generating funds and committing resources to protect children's health. Period.
I'm going to have to object.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I think it changes the entire thrust of what we're trying to do, even though absolutely you cannot ignore, I mean, health, abuse and mistreatment is a subset of health, but I think your amendment opens it up to a whole bunch of other things that are not specifically abuse and mistreatment.
Yeah, because it could be obesity.
It could be immunizations. Yeah. And all the money goes to immunizations like Gardasil, which it could soak it all up.
Representative Rose.
She already made the statement that I was going to make, so I will be opposing the amendment to the amendment.
Okay. You still want to have the amendment to the amendment? Or do you want to withdraw it, or do you want to leave it?
Sure, let's have it. We're doing this.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I'm sorry. Representative Keller, you had a question.
I guess that's a promotion. I just wanted to say that I, you know, I share your concern about children's health. And that doesn't mean at some point, if this fund would get flushed, that it couldn't come back to the legislature, and the legislature could expand the use of the trust money. The mental health trust has done in many ways. You know, they start programs and have expanded quite a bit. I mean, and we have to deal with it here at the House Committee. So I don't think that the rejection of your amendment is a rejection of your passions, just like Representative Gardner said.
Okay, Representative Roses.
Thank you. I've heard Representative Keller say this two or three times, and I guess that I'm not understanding what this bill does, because he said nothing prevents the legislature from redirecting or defining what they want. I think it does. I think if this bill passes, the legislature has no say in this anymore. It's under private control.
Can I respond?
Go ahead. Representative Keller.
Just that we could go back and rewrite the mission statement. That's all I'm saying. Because if we put it in statute, then say 5 years down the road, you know, that could be readdressed if the mission should be expanded.
Representative Rosen.
Thank you. I guess I'm a little bit confused, because if we tell them what their mission statement is before we give them the money, what control do we have over them changing the mission statement afterwards? We have no control over the funds. It's now privately controlled. Their management is privately controlled. They answer only to a board, and they have to verify with the commissioner for the Department of Revenue that they're managing the money in an expeditious way, and that they're inside the parameters. I don't think we have any control. We can say all we want that we want to change our mission statement, but we don't have any authority to do that once it's privatized.
One last follow-up.
Representative Sisna.
Oh, thank you. I want to make sure that I understand that Representative Keller is actually wanting to put his amendment into the section, I guess it's B, of section whatever, or B in the section 7. I want to know exactly where he's putting it, because if in fact, and I think that it was Representative Gardner that pointed out that that on line 12, page 3, which is under B but further. With number 3, the endowment trust shall be administered for the benefit of the community. Okay, is it replacing that sentence, or is it? It's replacing that sentence, or is it adding to the larger?
Representative Keller.
Yeah, I got two questions to respond here to. Well, okay. First, yours, because it was fresh in my mind. I have to go back and hear. But that's why I would make it conceptual, and it'd be, and the purpose of it would be to guide the. Ask Gene, their drafter, Leds Legal, to draft the amendment so that it affects the agreement that is made between DCED and the new entity. So there has to be an agreement there. And that's also partly the response to Representative Roses, is that as I see this agreement, maybe I misunderstand it wrongly, but if we were to change the mission statement, it would also, by effect, indirectly then affect the agreement, and there would be a process that would be started. And I would assume that if something like that happened, it would come from that end.
Okay, but we're on the amendment to the amendment. So, Representative Gardner.
Can I respond to that?
Representative Gardner.
My comment's not on the amendment to the amendment.
Okay.
Yeah,
Representative Sisna.
Back to that, if in fact it was a more generalized way, then I was misunderstanding where it would come, and in that case, I withdraw my amendment.
Okay.
Thank you.
The amendment to the amendment has been withdrawn. Now we have the amendment before us. There has been an objection. Would you read the roll? Representative Gardner has a question.
If the amendment is intended to be a mission statement for the grantee in this section, we don't have the authority to create a mission statement for the Alaska Children's Foundation. We can only say what our intention is of how the endowment fund should be used.
Correct. Representative Roses.
And also one more statement that was made is that we wanted to make sure that that was a condition under the transfer and a condition under how they would operate, and therefore there would be some oversight, and we would then be able to go back in. If that's the intent, I'm really against the amendment, because
I don't think they're asking for us to continue to stay involved, nor is it my intention as a legislature to stay involved with oversight and reporting back to us. This is clear that they have an advisory board, and that advisory board will make a report, will receive a report from the fund each year, and it'll also go to the Commissioner of Revenue to determine whether they are staying within the investment guidelines and if they haven't had any material breaches of the contract. So I don't think there's any intent for the legislature to stay involved, and if that's what the amendment would do, then I'm really against the amendment.
Would the Secretary call the roll?
On conceptual amendment one, Representative Keller.
Yes.
Representative Seaton is not present. Representative Cisno.
No.
Representative Gardner.
No.
Representative Fairclough is not present. Representative Roses.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
One yes, four no.
Okay, the amendment has failed, and now we have before us the version E bill. And yes,
before we proceed, I know the time is of essence. I want this bill to go through, but I you know, if we can do this without endangering the bill, could we get, is Gene still online? I don't want to go back and redo our vote or anything, but I would like to hear from her
I'm sorry, but the amendment failed, and so now we're going to go on to the next step.
What I would ask for is holding the bill over so that we could do it.
That's why I asked for the...
Just one last statement. I have to vote against the bill, but I want to say again that I really... I'm really for what the Children's Trust is doing, and I'm 100%, but I'm really concerned about the unintended effect of taking the legislative element out. So thank you for letting me put that on.
Okay. Representative Roses.
I would move House Bill number 422, version E, from committee with individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes.
Okay, hearing no objections, so moved.
There was an objection.
No,
he didn't object to me.
Okay, bill has passed. So thank you everyone for coming out on this wonderful sunny Saturday morning. And it is 5 minutes after 11, and we will adjourn.